Hi there, and welcome to Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thanks for listening. I appreciate your time tuning in and hope you find something interesting in the show. This is a show we're going to get into a little bit more of the personal journey, the sweat, the blood, the exercise, the angst that it takes to take a 500-mile trip. This is pretty, if you've ever heard about the Camino, you may have heard little bits and pieces about like a bucket list. I want to do this, a pilgrim's journey, little references like that to a very big undertaking. This is an enormous, for a lot of people, awareness, an awakening, a chance to shift perspectives and priorities, possibly. Kurt Kuntz is my guest today. He wrote the book about his journey, pretty much detailing, you know, the daily log of meeting and the comings and goings and the people on the path and his own perspective. A Million Steps. You can check it out. In the meantime, we're going to talk to him today about what it was like to, well, okay, first, Kurt, congratulations, you made it.
Oh, Wendy, thank you so much for inviting me onto your program, and I appreciate the compliment there.
What was the thing that, why? You know, that's the big question. What made you do this? Where did the idea come from?
That's really funny. I do a lot of public speaking. That is always the number one question. Why would a sane person undertake a 500-mile walk? And I would say the simplest answer for me, Wendy, is I've done a number of journeys in my life that have been some of these long trips, and they usually involve some kind of physical exertion. I have found those are the times in my life where I have grown as a person more than any other thing that I've ever done. And I think the simplest story is I think we get so caught up in our routines that we become a little bit dull and we don't even realize it. And you end up kind of sleepwalking through life and going through the motions, and that's not a good place to be. So when I look at a journey like this, I put myself in an environment where I was outside of my comfort zone in every level. Believe it or not, I'm not a hiker at all. I do a lot of physical activity, predominantly cycling, but hiking is not really my sport. I put myself in a foreign country where I didn't speak the language. When I travel, I typically travel in comfort. Over there, you sleep in bunk beds and hostels with other people above and below you. So it's quite a different environment. I find that when I put myself in those situations, to me, it's kind of like getting on the edge and leaning over and looking down. That's where I grow. That's why I went on the walk.
Okay, what did this do for your relationships?
Well, that was not a great thing. I had a wonderful girlfriend, the absolute love of my life, and we had been dating for about a four-year period, and really both of us thought we would ultimately get married. And about the third year of it, things were not really quite so good, and the fourth year was quite a struggle. And it was one of the reasons I did go on the walk. It provided a physical separation and also gave me a lot of time, and her a lot of time, to think about things also. And when I returned from the walk, this walk changes you as a person. And it gave me a realization that we should probably walk separately. And so after returning home, we did break up.
Well, the thing is, there are, among the people that you meet on that walk, other people going through different periods in their life. Now, there are some couples who went and did the walk together, but there were some who were also struggling with personal issues. And the walk is a chance to kind of get a clear head and some clarity on things in a way, or maybe just, you know, leave the past behind finally, because there's enough distance. Was that what it was like for you?
Well, it was. Everybody that goes on that trail is certainly, you know, you're going to find something, whether you're searching for it or not. Something's going to happen to you. There's some type of awakening, I believe, for every person that walks this trail. And so I think that a lot of people do have answers to some of their questions. Something that's a little difficult here, if you're going on that walk and you're looking for an answer, you probably won't find it. If you go there without an expectation and you just kind of let it be, that's when the really good stuff happens. And instead of really finding the answer, I would say that you get a clarity in your head and maybe a new perspective on all aspects of your life.
For just a basic layout, what is the Camino?
The Camino is an amazing trail. People have been walking this trail for 1,300 years. 2 million people have done it. 1 million did it in the Middle Ages, and 1 million people have done it since that time. It started out purely as a Christian pilgrimage, and it's believed that the bones of St. James, an apostle of Jesus, reside at the cathedral in Santiago. So in medieval times, people walked all throughout Europe from their front doors to the cathedral in Santiago seeking penance from St. James. The thing that amazes me about that is those people not only walked to the cathedral, when they got there, they had to walk back home. And they didn't have high-tech Patagonia shoes, and they didn't have buses and airplanes and all these things. So quite an arduous task for them. As you fast forward today, there's a wide variety of people that do it. Some are still very religious. Some are very spiritual. Some have it as a bucket list item. Some want the physical challenge, whatever it may be. The nice part about it is when you get there, you're not judged. It's not like there's a religious group or a hiking group. Everybody just accepts everybody for who they are at that time in the moment.
See, that's the thing I think is fascinating and appealing, because everybody, it's a common denominator. You're all doing the same thing, walking from one place to another. And that's really bottom line what it's about. You know, you're on a journey.
But you know, it really is. And another nice thing that happens over there when you... You know, when you meet people in your daily life, you know, you may eventually become friends with them and you say hi to them and ultimately have a cup of coffee, and the relationship kind of gels over time. On the Camino, they gel instantly. You're walking along, you meet somebody, and there's just such an enormous bond because you have so much in common in that you've undertaken this endeavor. With that, the relationships not only are deep, but it's kind of like an instantaneous feeling of one big family walking each other home to the cathedral in Santiago.
There's an interesting thing that I think each person brings to the table, because some choose to go more like a pilgrim with less maybe amenities, like an iPod or
yeah,
the ability to call home or a camera. And other people, you know, they want a documentation. They want to say, this is what I did. This is who I was as I walked the trail. It seems like you were, that was part of your quest, was to keep it, you know, to keep a memory of it and put it in writing to the best of your ability.
It very much was, Wendy. When I went on the trail, I wanted to go as minimal as possible. Weight is a very big issue. So you want to make sure that your backpack is light. Mine weighed 22 pounds, and I weighed 215 pounds when I started. The common rule is you want your pack to be no more than 10 to 15% of your body weight. The nice part about this trip, you don't need a tent. You don't need to carry food or water, as it's readily available throughout the trail. But on the items that I did take, I contemplated extensively whether to take that camera and music player. And the guidebook that I read, it's a wonderful book put out by a man named John Brierley. His guidebook recommends you don't take it. And he felt that a camera or music would kind of take you out of the moment. I found the opposite. I found with my camera, it kept me constantly finding beauty in areas I may not have seen it. So I saw that as a positive. On the music player, I took that, and I didn't listen to it constantly. Maybe 45 minutes to an hour and a half a day. And when I needed it, it was an awesome thing to have. Maybe I was struggling or just wanted to kind of get out of my world or whatever it was, and I could just plug into it, and it really helped me sail along. Very, very enjoyable.
Yeah, you list your playlist in the back of the book, just for people who want to know. Now, a couple of the songs, I thought, well, those are really relationship crucial issues that the songs are covering. Oh,
you know,
man.
On those songs I put in there, I have to say, I have 600 songs on my little music player, and I think I put my greatest hits in there, and it was about 25 songs. And there were some you thought were very relationship-oriented. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Well,
yeah, there probably were. And... Yeah, there are.
Well, it's just when you're talking about the changes that you made and the kind of let me just go in here. And Goodbye, My Lover, James Blunt. Fools in Love, Joe Jackson. I'm just, when I saw the titles and the way that, you know, I knew the struggle as part of this, it was kind of apparent that maybe this wasn't going to have a happy ending. Eagles wasted time. Adele, take it all. Candle in the wind. Nothing compares to you. I do like the Blind Boys of Alabama, Ben Harper, Satisfied Mind.
You know, Wendy, I think that you've identified a trend in my music taste there.
Well, so anyway, so of the 600, we get a little preview here in the back of the book. But there are other things that, you know, you take pictures of some of the people that you walked with. And just to kind of give people a frame of reference as you're telling this story, I think, you know, part of this is explaining and describing to people, this is a bare bones walk. How many days do you expect to walk? What's it when you're planning your journey? What's the normal time frame?
Yeah, some of the basic mechanics of it are pretty simple. Most people walk this trail somewhere between 4 to 6 weeks. That guidebook I talked about, again, the John Brierley book, they have a little kind of a daily map, and they recommend you go from point A to point B on this day. They have that spread out over a 30-day period. Some people take 60 days to do it. Some crazy people do it in 20 days. I figure, again, a real comfortable number is somewhere between 30 and 45 days. And that seems to be a pretty common amount. I average 17 miles a day. And up front, I did a little bit more. I kind of wanted to get a little bit ahead in case I got injured or I ran into bad weather or something like that. So my last week, I kind of ran out of runway. And the last week, I was doing about 10 miles a day, which was also a nice change. Because when I started by walking, and it wasn't a race. I don't want you to think that at all. It's just I'm a big guy, and I kind of have a naturally faster gait. With that in mind, I was always walking into new people. The last week of the walk, where I was kind of walking more at a pace that others were, I kind of flowed into Santiago with that same group. And it was very nice to kind of go in there with a group of friends that I knew very well.
The other thing, too, is as you're meeting these folks, you know, sometimes you're thinking, I'll never see them again. And then, you know, what, at the end of the day, whoop, there you all are.
Oh, the serendipitous nature of running into people, not only while I was on the trail, but continuing through my life right now is just absolutely overwhelming. To put it in perspective, the day I started, there were roughly 300 people that started. I went in September, which is a shoulder season, to the beginning of fall. In the summertime, there's about 1,000 people a day that start. But take my number of 300, that means that within kind of a week's worth of people, there's about 2,000 folks, if you will. And again, everybody is walking at a different pace. I had people that I would say goodbye to, and I can't tell you how many times, I called them shadows. They just seem to orbit back into my life on a constant basis. And it just doesn't stop. I got an email the other day from a guy who's a friend of mine on Facebook. And he told me, he said, I was looking at my Camino journal, and I think that we were in the same hostel on September 16th in a city called Punta Lorena. And I looked back at my photographs. I had a photograph of this guy. I mean, what are the chances of that? The man lives in Germany. And those kind of things seem to happen quite often still to this day.
Did you talk to people who'd been on the Camino before, like this is your second, third, fourth time?
Not a whole lot of them. I definitely ran into a few folks like that, but not a lot of veterans. Before I went on the journey, I talked to quite a number of people that had done it. And so that was good. But on the way there, I think I met maybe, I don't know, 5 or 10 people that had done it more than one time.
Okay. Well, I just know that that's one of the things that some people say. It's almost like a, you know, the book I had that I'd read before, and I interviewed Robert Mullen when he wrote about his trip, and I was just looking to see it was 2010. I didn't realize it's been that long. But he talked about some of the people, the old timers, who said it isn't the same because now there are rules at some of the places, you know, you're supposed to put your shoes somewhere. It's become almost commercialized, if you could say that about this, because there are more people flocking to them. I think the movie The Way probably has something to do with that as well. And it's so funny because as I'm agreeing to do the interview with you and solidifying the date and the time and all that, I have a note from Hay House. Oh, by the way, or from one of the distributors, somebody says, oh, by the way, we're sending you a free copy of The Way. It's on the way. I don't have it yet, but I just thought it was hilarious, you know, the synchronicities of all of this and that happening. But it's one way for people who don't have any other form of doing a vision quest to get this kind of separation and erase an identity. And sometimes that's a crisis and sometimes it's a joy. But it seems that you ran into a lot of people who were willing to share their stories as you made that walk, and that you learned a few things.
Oh, I ran into a bunch of people that were, you become pretty transparent over there. It's almost as if there's no risk in kind of sharing your story with other people. And I really believe on that trail and also on your bigger journey in life, I truly believe that people come into your life for a reason. They share a gift with you, and then they may walk on. And by walking on, it allows you space to let somebody else in and for you to share your gift with another person. And it was a real big lesson for me on that trail. And maybe it helped me in ending my relationship with Roberta. I had trouble with my first friend in letting go. And it was the first guy I met. He was a great person. And we walked across the French Pyrenees on the first day. And he told me that he was going to walk about 20 kilometers a day, and I was planning on more, so I had to say goodbye. Saying goodbye was tough. And as time went on, it became easier and easier, and it suddenly dawned on me, I can't walk into Santiago with, you know, 50 people under each arm. It's physically impossible, not practical, and it's not going to work. So I came to the conclusion on this trail over there that, and it's a kind of a sad one in a way, 100% of mortal relationships end. And some of them in a pleasant manner, some of them through death, some of them naturally, whatever it is, they all end. And by accepting that and realizing you don't have to have anger, maybe you can enjoy the time that person was in your life instead of focusing on maybe why it didn't work out. And so I've tried to really look at my relationships in that manner and let things go.
Well, I think that part of it, there was a time when you put you're talking about the etiquette, and you had socks on a table where people were going to be eating, and you were immediately chastised.
Yeah. That was an interesting moment. I woke up, and you're in these group sleeping rooms. You're in bunk beds, and there's a lot of people. And I was kind of an early riser, so I would try to sneak out. And I thought I was being a good citizen by quietly leaving the room. And I went into a kitchen area, and one thing I'd like to make sure, I didn't put dirty socks on a table. I put clothes on the table
that
had all been washed. And I was just kind of folding things up and loading my pack, and there was a group of people from France, and they came in, and they were irritated. And I didn't understand why. And they kept looking at me and kind of almost snarling. It was very uncomfortable. And they were very upset that I had actually put, it was especially those socks on the table. And it was just maybe a cultural difference of, you know, here I thought I was doing a nice thing by quietly leaving the room, and they were just horribly offended that I would have actually placed the garment on that table. And just another learning experience to recognize there's different boundaries for different people.
Well, and I think that's important, because you talk about all the times you walked with people you didn't know the language. You may do with sign language or something, you know, a rough equivalent.
Yeah, Wendy, it was always fun. You know, I remember one morning I was walking with a gentleman from Japan, and he was about 22 years old. We could not come up with a common word that we could communicate with. But we walked together for about 30 minutes. I don't think I've ever laughed so hard through pointing at things and just smiling and thumbs up and thumbs down. We had a hell of a time and very, very enjoyable. And when there's a will, there's a way. Another thing that was fun, I came across a number of situations where there would be three of us walking together and one person actually knew both languages and would act as an interpreter. And it was interesting to communicate to a third party through another person.
Well, and there was one where there were a couple of, I can't remember, where you had a group and it was a couple of smaller children.
Oh, yeah. That was incredible.
The little boy's picture is adorable.
You know, that little boy, the little boy's name was Mateo. He was 7 years old, and the parents were a couple from Phoenix, Arizona. It was, I can't believe I remember these names, but it was Joseph and Toby. Toby was the woman, and they had a little boy, Mateo, and a little girl named Pascal, who was 2 years old. And I was just thinking, this seven-year-old boy, I don't know what his life is going to be going forward, but I guarantee whatever it is, it will be grandiose. If he's going to be an actor, he's going to be Brad Pitt. If he's going to be a world leader, he's going to be a president. If he's going to be a scholar, he'll win a Nobel Prize. Just quite an unbelievable young man. And I just thought, wow, walking the Camino at 7 years old, what an opportunity.
Well, carrying a two-year-old. Yeah, that's a commitment on the parents' part too, because it's just, there are so many stories of why people do this. It's just fascinating that it continues to draw, and not only that, to compound. It's more and more people are finding it, discovering it, wanting to go.
Oh, Wendy, the number of people walking this trail is almost overwhelming. In 1985, 5,000 people did it. In 1995, it was 20,000. In 2005, 100,000. 2010, 200,000 people. So it took 1,300 years to hit 2 million. Over the next 5 years, that we'll see 3 million, which is just an incredible number.
Are you going to go back?
I am going to go back. I'm not sure when. I actually turned 50 this Saturday, and I was thinking about doing it when I was 60, just kind of as a drifting idea out there, and I'm already kind of getting the urge to go back sooner. this has become a daily part of my life with the, you know, by writing this book about it, and I do a lot of public speaking, and it's just in front of me all the time. I love to go out and motivate and talk about it, and I really fell in love with this trail. The thing that scares me is this. One of the greatest things that happened to me is when I left my home in Boise, Idaho, I left with zero expectations. And I told myself, if I get there and it sucks, I'm going to just ditch the backpack and I'll go to Paris or something. How bad can life be? So I didn't see a downside, but I didn't say, okay, I'm going to go there and I'm going to walk this many, you know, kilometers a day, and I'm going to, you know, find out why I drank, or what's wrong with my girlfriend, or what's wrong with me. I didn't go there with any of that. And with that lack of expectation, everything was really great. I think it'd be a little hard to go back now because I had such a great experience. I'd have something to compare it to. So I was thinking if I waited enough time, maybe I'd forget some of it.
Okay. My guess is whenever you go, you're going to have a good time one way or the other. It seems that you bring that to the table, your personality. You just have a way of finding a positive side.
I appreciate that. And there's another part in the book that I had a real interesting morning. I was walking along one day and this guy came up behind me. And when I say behind me, I saw his headlamp, and it got closer and closer, and we ended up talking, and he was quite an incredible man. Our first conversation, I said, "Where are you going?" Most people have a destination for the day, or maybe they're going to, you know, where they're going to go was my simple question. His response was, "I'm going to wherever I can make the biggest difference." And I was like, wow, this is not going to be a normal conversation. And I told him about another journey I took through Europe on bicycle in 2006. And I told him how on that trip, things really didn't seem to work out. I had issues with my mechanical issues with spokes breaking. I always seemed to be riding into the wind. I had some bad weather. I had some weird experiences with people. I lost a bag one day, just trouble. And I made the comment that on this trip, everything was really working out. And it was kind of like winning the lottery every day. And he looked at me and said, "Did it ever dawn on you that maybe it's you?" And it was like, holy Toledo. I think it is true. I think that I believe in this karma, and that you get what you manifest. And I think on my bike trip, maybe I was in a different place in life, and I kind of attracted that negativity. On this trip here, oh my God, it was so positive.
Well, that's a fascinating way that when we find ourselves in situations like that, sometimes we're able to be more blunt and forthright because we don't have the inhibitions. You know, this is a trip that really pushes your limits. And I think that that conversation you had with him, he wasn't afraid to say, this is the way I see it.
Oh, not at all. And it was, yeah, imagine that, a stranger coming and telling you that the reason that you broke a spoke on a trip 6 years ago was because it was you. That's not typically, you know, I don't think some of your best friends would have the
gall. Uh-huh.
It's not a negative way, but would have the confidence to tell you something like that.
And that is, he had nothing to lose. He was on a walk. You were either going to walk with him or not. And if he was honest, forthright, and, you know, it came from a place of, he was sincere. He was trying to do you a favor and say, maybe it's you, you know.
And he did do me a favor. And again, here's another amazing story. The guy told me that after the Camino, he was going to Egypt, and he somehow had some involvement with some of the folks that actually did the revolution over there. And he was going to do some coaching deal, or I'm not sure exactly what it was. And he said he didn't expect to come back to the United States for a number of years. And we became Facebook friends and email friends and this and that. I got an email from him one day. He said, I'm going to be traveling through your city. Would you like to meet for coffee? And he ended up, the guy came to my house, and we had some lentil soup and coffee con leche, and spent an afternoon together reminiscing about the trail. And just an amazing, amazing situation.
So how many people have you, continue to have contact with since then?
I would say there's probably a dozen people that I'm in regular contact with, and five of those I'm in real intimate contact with, meaning, you know, I'd say two or three times a month we share some email or do a Skype conversation or something along those lines.
So is there a plan to regroup possibly and have a reunion?
Oh, I doubt it. I think it's one of those things like, you know, you just talk about your good friends and think of them as stars. And just because you don't see them all the time doesn't mean they're not there. And they're just, you know, we shared a great moment together, and they're just important people in my life. But I don't really see, you know, maybe it'd be fun to maybe see one at a time as I, you know, if I went to Germany, I would certainly look up my German friends. If I went to South Africa, I would certainly seek those people out. But for all of us to maybe meet back in Spain, probably not likely.
Well, that's the interesting thing about this. It draws people from all walks of life, all ages, all ethnicities, all religions. This isn't, you know, one path, one way. It's like, if you feel like you have to make a journey and there's some place that you can go that's safe, but relatively unknown, there you are, right out in the middle of nowhere, and yet you're not lost. Speaking of that, how many times did you get lost?
It's an interesting question there. I got lost two times, and this trail is marked with these little yellow arrows. And some of them are actually big yellow arrows, but they're painted on bridges, they're on power poles, they're carved into the ground, they're on walls. Everywhere you go, there's these little yellow arrows that tell you where to go. And to me, I kind of took that metaphor as they're signs pointing you in the right direction on your journey. I got lost on that trail two times. And I wasn't more than a half kilometer off that trail before I knew in my head and my heart, I'm in the wrong place. And in coming home, I've taken that same concept that there are signs out there flashing brilliantly all the time telling you where to go. And a perfect example would be if you come home from work every day and you're completely fatigued, that's a sign that you're in the wrong job. And unfortunately, I think most people just avoid looking at that and say, well, it is what it is. Well, that's not what it should be. And I try to pay attention to those signs and realize they're there to tell me where to go. And in my bigger journey in life, I really try to pay attention to those signs. And like I said, when I was lost on that trail, I knew in my head and my heart in 10 seconds. And I think that same thing exists in our lives.
Okay, we're going to take a break, but I want to come back and ask you, you know, people are asking you what it's like and for advice and that kind of thing. So, you know, aside from giving them the guidebook, do you have some coaching that you can share with people who are contemplating this? Because I'm sure somebody listening to you is probably going to take this journey on as a result. And they may have seen other things that are giving them that little nudge of, hey, come give it a try. you'll find something. You'll find something. So in this next half hour, we'll talk a little bit about that. But I also want to find out a little bit about how you came to this point in your life, because not everybody is footloose and fancy free and can take on some, a commitment like this. Sometimes people go and they split it up. But what was it that you took with you that you kind of reassessed while you were on that trail? Would that work for you?
Yeah, that sounds great. I look forward
okay.
to it.
Okay. Again, we're talking today. My guest has walked the Camino. He's one of the now millions. Kirk Koontz, A Million Steps is the book, and I love the cover. It's just, above the clouds, really up there on top of the world. So if you're listening, check it out. You can also check out his website and the blog and all that good stuff. But we're going to come back with more from him. You can get that up close and personal story of what it's like to walk the Camino. On Empower Radio, I'm Wendy Guerin.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six,
ow,
seven. Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
Hello, we're back. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett, talking with Kirk Koontz about his book, A Million Steps, Walking the Camino. And the thing about the Camino that I think is so seductive is that when people come back, they have stories of other people and other languages, of other nationalities, of experiences that they seem to have really transformed in a way their connection to the daily, the grind. And they just have learned to distance themselves and put that aside and really appreciate the moments more. It's like when I interviewed Robert Mullen, one of the things that he talked about was that he'd never felt that he'd lived so intensely as when he was on the trail. And he was 60, and his wife said, "What are you doing? When have you ever walked that far?" And not only that, with a backpack, you're joking. And he's one of those who says, maybe I want to go again, you know. Robert Brierley. I'm sorry, John Brierley. Is that Brierley? That's the way.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. He's the author of the guides. He says, when you hear that call, don't overlook it. It might be one of the most important calls you ever respond to. Don't go back to sleep. So in a way, it's a wake-up call for a lot of people, or at least that's that seductive part of it. And reading and, you know, hearing your story, you have that same thing. It just, it's so invigorating. You know, you're enthusiastic, you're energized, you're dynamic. Were you the same before you started?
Not at all. It's an intense wake-up call. And I have a hard time understanding what actually happens to you. It's hard to comprehend that you can take 30 or 40 days out of your life, get on an airplane, go to a foreign country, and just walk. I mean, walking is a pretty mindless deal. It's challenging, but it's not, you know, it's not rock climbing. It's not something that takes incredible focus. You just go and do it. And changing up your lifestyle, being in that group arena, being able to slow down and think about things and enjoy nature and enjoy all these things, it just seems to somehow change your perspective on life. I would say there's not one person that would ever walk this that's going to come out the same on the other end as they started with. And it changed me in a number of different ways. And one of them, I'll give you a specific example. I have really tried for a long period of time to figure out what living in the now is. And I've read a number of books on it, the Eckhart Tolle book and, you know, Wayne Dyer's material and this and that of what is being in the now. Well, when you're on that Camino, every day is a mystery. You don't know how far you're going to walk, where you're going to stay, who's going to cross your path, what you're going to eat, if your body's going to hold out, or what the weather's going to be like. With all of those challenges, you don't have a minute to worry about your past, and you don't have any time to waste thinking about your future. You are present in the moment all of the time. You spend 30 or 40 days in that arena, and you know what it is. So now that I've come back, what I've used to change my life, naturally you're going to drift into your past. And instead of going back there and kind of getting attached to some rotten experience and letting it pull me down, when I'm in my past, I at least realize I'm there, and I ask myself the question, what am I doing here? Am I learning or am I wasting time? If I'm learning, I try to learn the lesson and get the heck out of there. The same with the future. I think everybody looks at the future as salvation for their past. And so you look out on the 5 or 10 year arena. And I ask this in my speeches a lot. I say, who in this room is not going to be happier, healthier, and wealthier 5 years down the road? And everybody's going to be. Well, the trouble is that's a 5 year rolling window and you never seem to get there. And it really brings to my focus that the only time you can be happy is now. So I'm not saying throw all caution to the wind for your future. You obviously have to have rent money. You have to have food on the table and, you know, some practical planning for life. But who today is where they thought they would be 5 years ago? And the answer is not very many.
Well, I think that's a good call. The deal is if you continue to put that out there, then it does. It just keeps getting further and further away and your steps continue. With this, there is an end of the journey. You finally reach the town and you get the stamp. And that's, talk about that too, because I think that's a kind of a fun part where every town, every place you stay authorizes, yes, he was here, you're legit.
Yeah, it's a neat deal. At the beginning of the walk, you can get a passport in St. John, which is where the walk starts, or you can order one from a domestic organization called the American Pilgrims on the Camino. APOC is their acronym. And you fill out an online form and they mail you your actual passport. And this passport, every albergue, which is the hostel that you stay in, when you show up, they ask for your credential or passport, which is the same thing. You give it to them, they place a brilliant stamp on it, and that documents not only that you were there, but if you don't have a passport and you're not on the walk, you can't stay at these places. So the nice part about it is every night you're with nobody other than walkers. And, you know, in some other European cities, you may go into a hostel and, you know, there are some, you know, maybe college kids partying and older people looking for inexpensive housing or whatever it may be. In this arena, you're with people that are on the same tangent with you, which is a nice thing. At the end of the road in Santiago, there's a pilgrim's office, and you go in there and you present your passport to them. They look at the different stamps and kind of verify that you had done the walk, and they issue you a Compostela, and you go into the record books as a person that has completed a walk. And I'm actually sitting in my home office right now looking at it. It's up on my wall, and it's I'm pretty proud of it.
Oh, I think you should be. That's just an amazing and extraordinary adventure. And when we talk about people taking on these life treks, these challenging paths or journeys of awakening, something like this is so doable. It doesn't involve, you know, heli skiing in on the highest mountain on earth that, you know, it just would be cost prohibitive for most of us on the planet. But something like this, you can walk, and it's just, I think, compelling for a lot of people when they hear stories like yours. There was one of the stories I heard, and I don't know where it was, the guy who walked from his home, and it was 1,500 miles, and he was going to walk right back home.
Yeah. It was a young man named Daniel, 22 years old, from Switzerland, and he had walked from his front door, and it was just an amazing story. I couldn't believe it when he told me.
What was the why? He's 22. Was that just one of the things he was going to get out of the way first?
I have absolutely no idea. All I know, a friend of mine told me a long time ago, never tell your story first. So I'm standing in this little village. I'm talking to this guy. And, he asked where I started, and I told him. And I said, where did you start? He told me in my front door in Switzerland. And it was an unbelievable story.
Okay, so that gives you an idea that everybody comes with a different story. When you're packing for this trip, there are some things that they suggest that you do. You said you were in good shape, but you still managed to get a few blisters.
I did. Physical fitness is a real part of my life, and I very much, I've always been active, but again, predominantly cycling. And there's not, you know, before the walk, I had bought a pair of shoes that the local store told me would be great hiking shoes, and they were very comfortable. And I went to, there's a town a little north of here called Sun Valley, Idaho, and there's some large mountains up there. So I went up to Sun Valley and I started to, you know, I went on a couple of 10-mile hikes. I just wanted to make sure I could carry a pack and I could walk with my shoes and that I could actually do it. And when I got over there, things certainly seemed to really work out. As far as the packing, there's a number of lists that will tell you what to take, but it's just a minimalist trip. You don't need very much. You need two or three pairs of socks, two or three pair of underwear, a couple of shirts, a pair of hiking shorts, and one pair of long shorts, and maybe a little windbreaker and some minimal rain gear and a sleeping bag. Past that, it's kind of a beautiful trip because you don't need a lot of stuff. And anything you do need, these villages are spread out about 3 to 4 miles is about as far as you're ever going to go without being in some type of a village. They sell stuff, so you don't have to worry about, you know, it's not like you're going into the middle of the Mojave Desert by yourself. There's commerce available, and the other fellow pilgrims, they'll help you out. If you're missing something, people are very kind, and they'll give you stuff. So if you're going to pack and go for this, don't overthink it. In the guidebook, it says every ounce counts, and if you're questioning whether you need it, you probably don't.
Yeah, when in doubt, leave it out.
Exactly.
Okay, and you put the blog, I'm looking right now at the A Million Steps on CaminoWays.com. It's really fun there, too, because it says, click here to chat with us. Got a question? No. I'm not going to get that serious just yet. But the fun thing about it is, though, that when you can do so little and improve your attitude so much, I think it speaks volumes about the power of this trail.
You know, it's just an amazing trail. There's another movie that's coming out right now, and the woman, her name is Lydia Smith, and it's called The Camino Documentary. Lydia actually brought her film to Boise for my book launch, and it was awesome. We had over 600 people that came down to watch the movie. We rented a big place downtown, and it was quite an adventure. Lydia and I have done some joint interviews together, and she's taking her film across the country right now. She walked it in 2008, and she has extensive background in television and film, and so she decided to go back in 2009 and create a documentary. It took her 4 years to complete the film, and it right now is just being released in select theaters. And interestingly enough, she loaned a lot of her footage to Martin Sheen and Emilio Estevez to make The Way, because a lot of those actors actually had not walked, and they used some of her footage to train. But I guess the point being, when she arrived in Santiago, it was the beginning of her journey. Same for me. When I arrived in, when I started this trail, I never had the wildest dream of writing a book. Halfway through the trip, I thought, wow, this is so incredible. I may have to write about this. So the journey ended in Santiago. I flew home and I started to write a book. That was a whole nother brand new journey. I finished the book and I can finally have a little bit of comprehension of postpartum depression of when the book is done and you hit final and upload the files to Amazon, it's, you know, you don't change it. You have to let it go and take on its own life. Well, I thought maybe that was an ending, and it wasn't at all. Going out and promoting the book and speaking and just you and I being together right here. Last night I spoke to a group of about 100 people, and I met some nice folks there. And I'm going to be in San Diego this weekend speaking at some libraries down there. I'm going to Denver and different areas. And it just, for me, it's a never-ending journey. And the nice part about it, getting back to the trail, it isn't about arriving. It is about the journey itself, and the joy and the happiness is in the small little events, not the big things. And that was another big lesson for me in life.
There's a thing, a Spanish proverb, beginning is everything.
And very much most, so.
Most of the time we're beginning, we think there's an ending, and yet it's just on to the next thing. It's constant, new, fresh learning, expanding, exploring. I like your little refresh move.
that was a pretty fun one. What I would do from time to time, I would put my stick in the ground, my walking stick, and I would just do a 360 turn around it. And I don't know what it was, but it truly refreshed me. If I was tired, I would do it. If I was on top of the world, I would do it. And maybe it was just an opportunity to get a different perspective, to maybe see where I had come or where I was going. I'm not sure what it was, but boy, it sure energized me.
Well, like the time they made you sing for your supper.
Another incredible night. we arrived in an albergue, and it was the first time that we had prepared a group meal. And that only happened to me three times on the trail. And they kind of, as a ruse, when it was getting close to dinner time, they said, let's all meet in front of the cathedral or in front of the albergue, and we have to kind of talk to you. And I didn't know. It was kind of weird. Didn't know what they were doing. And the guy said, well, it turns out we don't have the cooking capacity to prepare all this food, so we have to go to the town bakery and get the food there. And they won't release it unless we all sing. So we handed out a trash can lid and a couple guitars to people, and me and 60 strangers walked through this little cobblestone village, and the village only had 200 people in it, singing at the top of our lungs, and it was just another moment. One of the greatest nights I had on the trail. And again, singing with strangers in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, so you say you didn't have any great epiphanies. It sounds like you've had a lot of them since. But what happened with the relationship with your father, your mom, your girlfriend? Because I do see transition in those.
Well, there's a lot of transition. I mean, my father died in 2001 from alcoholism, and I was also alcoholic, and I quit drinking two days before he died, and probably the best thing that ever happened to me. And I was a very functional person, but I was headed down a very, very wrong path. And this particular trail really allowed me just reflective time to think about where my life was and where I've, you know, how far I've come, and kind of some sadness reminiscing about my father. There was the, you know, I told you about my girlfriend already, and that was right. It was a sad ending. It was a heartbreaker. She's a wonderful woman, and we both wish it would have worked out, but, you know, it doesn't always work out. With my mother, I have a great relationship with her. She's a wonderful woman. In fact, for my 50th birthday, she's taking me to San Diego this weekend, and I'm very much looking forward to that. And I think that covers it. Is there a more specific question you had about any of those? Or
that'll work, because it reminded me of the fact when you got to the village where the wine flowed freely for you, it was a dead well.
Oh, you know, that's another incredible story. I'm very fortunate in my drinking. I know a lot of people struggle to stay sober every single day. That is not me. I do not have any desire to go out and drink. I realize I can't, and it's not something that I want to pursue. And from time to time, especially when I was dating Roberta, she would occasionally would have a glass of wine with dinner and say, here, just taste this. And it wasn't taste it till I could go get drunk and go crazy or something. It was just take a tiny little sip. And so I would, you know, occasionally, when I say occasionally, maybe once every year and a half, I would get a little thimble of wine in my mouth. There's a famous deal on the Camino where there's a fountain that has water and wine, and it actually is connected to a winery. And there's a very famous a saying above, and I don't remember exactly what it says, but there's a Spanish proverb that says kind of something like, enrich yourself, and this will make your journey great. And people carry scallop shells on the back of their pack. And the idea is you take your scallop shell and you put a little wine in it, you take a sip, and you kind of have a moment. Well, I got there, and I thought, well, I'm going to do this. So I take my pack off, I get my shell, and I put it up there, and I pull the tap. It's dry. Dry as can possibly be. And Wendy, you have to understand, it's physically attached to a winery. So I decided.
I love the universe going, la, 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 la. We're paying attention. Yeah. Are you?
That's what it was. It said, nope, none for you, young man.
I just, that part I love. Okay, I'm an intuitive. I do stuff like this, you know, these things really are powerful for me. I pulled a couple of cards saying, okay, what's the focus today and what is the Camino about for real? Just from my own perspective, I get the I am presence and patience. And I, you know, those two things just come through so powerful that, you know, you're so in touch with your sense of that joie de vivre, that your presence. As you're recounting your story, this seems to be a common thing for people, for at least the ones that I am running into who have done this trip.
I think it's very common, and there's just so many life lessons that that seem to pop up from this trail. Another one was the whole idea of worry. I found on this trail over there that the less I worried, the better things worked out. And this is the kind of a walk where you're walking along, and let's say you roll your ankle and you really have an injury. I guarantee three people behind you is an orthopedic surgeon from the Mayo Clinic, and he or she will come and help you in ways you can't imagine. And by kind of letting go of this worry and really experimenting with it, saying, I'm not going to worry about a damn thing. The further I got away from it, the better things worked out. Well, in coming home, I've tried to say, it works so well over there, how can I get rid of worry in my life here? And one of the first things I did is I sat down and I made a list of the things that I worry about. And I believe I came up with a total of 11 major things. I immediately crossed 8 of them off that list, saying, these things are all completely beyond my control, so why would I possibly spend any useless time worrying about them? You then look on the other side of the ledger, what's going right in your life? What's working? And that's your journal of gratitude. And that is an infinite number of things. I mean, you have air, you have water, you have food, you have shoes, and you're lucky you have a foot to put them on. You have friends and family and whatever it is. There are so many positive things. And so I thought, really, am I going to worry about these three little things in my life that maybe not be going right? When I've got all these things that are, and my answer is no, I'm going to focus on the other side of it and just get rid of the worry.
Well, I think the times that you said you broke down and bought things that you thought you would need, as soon as you bought those things, then you didn't need them. And it was, you know,
that was serendipitous. I bought a poncho and it stopped raining. I bought some sunscreen and I then walked through clouds for about a week. And I can't remember the final one, but there was a third one. That was something similar to weather related. I had the ability by buying that item to change the weather.
I thought that was brilliant. That's just, you know, saying that you change your perspective. I'm prepared now. Yep, you are. So the weather said, yeah, you're prepared. No problem.
Yeah.
We're going to let you go. I have nothing but praise for your story and your journey. And I think if, you know, if you're traveling about and sharing this with people, that you're going to get a lot of people curious and possibly committed to making this journey one of their own. And if they want to plan ahead, they can connect with you. And again, the movie, that sounds like that's going to be an excellent film too.
Oh, it's a great movie. Camino documentary, wonderful program.
All right. So the book is available through you. You're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, and it's Kurt Koontz. Koontz, A Million Steps. Just read the book. If you're listening, it's one of those things where it's just a very simple story of what happens when you're willing to get out of your comfort zone and things don't go wrong. How's that? You have trust and faith and put one foot in front of the other. Thank you. I really appreciate your time. And anything else you want to say before we close?
You know, I just appreciate you having me on the show here, and I tried to write this book in a manner that people could really feel like they were in my head, my shoes, and my heart for the entire journey. And it's very personal. It's not a guidebook. It's not a historical book. It just is really the story of what a journey is. And I do a lot of speaking about it, and if anybody wants to get a hold of me, they can go to that website. My phone number's on there. My email's on there. I'd love to come and talk to different groups out there, and I obviously hope a lot of people will read the book and will enjoy it. It seems to be doing pretty well, and I hope that programs like this will get the word out there further.
Yes, I think you will. The thing I enjoyed reading when you were talking about the daily breaks you had with the food, and the one thing, it made coffee just seem so much more refreshing.
Oh, coffee con leche, the official drink of the Camino de Santiago.
It just was like every time then there was like a croissant or something thrown in. It's like, oh, that just sounded like heaven. And it was just, you know, the ambiance you put in the background of the book really amplified the effect of the coffee con leche. It was
nice. Thank you so much.
So, well, thank you. I appreciate your time. And again, if you're listening, check out the website to find out more about the walk itself. And it's on CaminoWays.com. You can get the guidebooks. And Kurt obviously is a good speaker and somebody who can share his journey. And we didn't have time to tell all of the stories. Believe me, he's got more in there. But if you can read the book, A Million Steps, you'll get another insight into more of this, what this trip is like and how you leave a lot of your baggage behind when you're done with the trip. Not on the trip, but when you go home and you say, hey, I'm done carrying this. I did the Camino. Hey, I got perks. And don't know why.
Wine.
So thank you. Before we get out of here, I want to remind you, if you're listening to the show, I'm now doing the Twitter thing. Okay, so you can find out more about Talking to Night Lights on Twitter. And you the Facebook page, Conscious Living with Wendy Garrett, that's the show page. Or you can check out my blog, the journal talkingtonightlights.com, and that talks about the connections that I do with energy that I've had people talking about and why these nightlights for me are real. It's my own connection with spirit, and it works 24/7 wherever I go. It's been doing it since 1997. It hasn't stopped. It's not going to, because it's part of who we are and where we're going. It's that guiding light that keeps us lit from within. Thanks for listening. I appreciate your time. Have a fabulous day.